Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A wild and wonderful Wednesday to you. Welcome to the show. So glad that you've joined me. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Lots of great stuff coming up today. Now, today is October the 12th. It's the feast day of Carlo Acutis. Going to get into that in just a second. And it's also my parents' anniversary, their wedding anniversary. I just saw them a couple days ago, but happy 54th wedding anniversary, Mom and Dad. Love you. And hey, if you hadn't got married on this day 54 years ago, I wouldn't be here talking to everybody out there in the wild world of Relevant Radio and the internet. Speaking of the internet, this is amazing because blessed Carlo Acutis, and it's his feast day today, as I said. He was the cyber apostle of the Eucharist. That's one of the monikers that was given him. I think that's such a great thing. Cyber apostle of the Eucharist. We're going to find out why very soon. Talk about bringing Christ to the world through the media. That's our mission here at Relevant Radio. In the very young, he was only 15 when he died. Carlo Acutis was beatified in 2020 by Pope Francis. You're going to be hearing about him. And I'm going to be sharing with you a really cool interview that his mom, Antonia, gave, and she actually released a book. It just came out today. It's called The Secret of My Son. The Secret of My Son. It's really the secret of his holiness. And it was released today on Blessed Carlo's feast day in Italian. There's no English translation yet, but I'm sure one is forthcoming. Or maybe Patrick Alog can do it. Our own Patrick Alog, who's working the phones, and you can talk to him if you want. If you just want to rap with Patrick, he's there. 888-914-9149. Patrick, of course, very professionally translated a speech by the new Italian prime minister. We had that on the show a few days ago. So, hey, who knows? Maybe he can do this book as well. I don't want to lose him, though. I don't want to lose him as a professional translator. I want him working with us here. Well, who was Carlo Acutis? If you don't know much about him, you really should. Here's a little clip for you from Rome Reports about what he did. One of the many incredible things he did during his young life. Check this out.
Blessed Carlo Acutis has earned the nicknames God's Influencer and Cyber Apostle of the Eucharist. That's thanks to his pioneering work transforming new technology into a tool to talk about God. His life was brief, but made a tremendous impact. He designed the website miracolieucaristici.org. There, he sought to show and explain to the world the principal Eucharistic miracles. It's a collection that's made its way around to the globe. Carlo's work was huge. He spent almost 3 or 4 years putting together this collection of Eucharistic miracles. It was diffused widely in 2005 as well. That was the year John Paul II dedicated to the Eucharist. From there, the website has spread and gathered international fame in an incredible way. The website, miracolieucaristici.org, is available in 17 languages, among them Swahili, Urdu, and Vietnamese. Using photographs and historical descriptions, the exhibition presents parts of the Eucharistic miracles that have taken place in different countries and that the Church recognizes. It also explains the Eucharist's impact on the lives of different saints. This project has been presented in more than 500 parishes in Italy and more than 10,000 in other countries.
All right, so that was from Rome Reports. And if you didn't catch the name, she was saying it very, very quickly with an Italian accent. If you didn't catch the name of Blessed Carlo Acutis' website that he put together on Eucharistic miracles, don't worry, we've got you covered. We're going to link to it in the show notes. So if you check the podcast, which should be up a few minutes after the show ends, you can get the link there. And it's available, as was said in the report, in several different languages. So cool. So here's just a few facts about his life. He died on this day, and that's why his feast day is today. This is kind of his heavenly birthday in 2006. He was only 15 years old. He was beatified on October the 10th, 2020 in Assisi, Why is Sisi? Well, he was actually buried there. And I also love it in that report how they called him God's influencer. That's another nickname. Everybody wants to be an influencer on the internet, on social media, on TikTok or Instagram, whatever the case may be. But he was influencing for God. I love it. The cyber apostle of the Eucharist. Man, those are pretty cool saint nicknames, I would say. So he was actually born on May the 3rd, 1991 in London. He was born in England. His parents were working there at the time, but just a few months after that, his parents and his father's name was Andrea and his mother's name is Antonia. I'm going to be sharing some stuff that she said about her son in just a little bit. They moved to Milan just a few months after he was born. Now, when he was a teenager, that's when Carlo was diagnosed with cancer. He had leukemia. And he offered his sufferings for the Pope, who at the time, of course, was Benedict XVI, and for the church. And he said this, quote, "I offer all the suffering I will have to suffer for the Lord, for the Pope, and the church," end of quote. And he was buried, as I said, in Assisi. He specifically requested this because he had a special devotion to St. Francis of Assisi. And his canonization cause was officially opened in the year 2013. He got the designation Venerable in 2018, and he was proclaimed blessed, as I said, in 2020. So really cool. And I'm going to share more about what his mom said about his special devotion to God, even as a toddler. It's pretty amazing because his parents really weren't that religious. He wound up actually kind of converting his mom, and we'll talk about that. But he was well known for defending children at school who got picked on, who got persecuted, especially disabled children. Really a kind of heartwarming anecdote about him. He had a friend at school, and that friend's parents, unfortunately, were getting divorced at the time, and Carlo made a really special effort to invite that friend over to his family's home for dinner and kind of include that guy in his own family life. And so always looking up for other people, even at that very, very young age. And as you heard about in that clip from Rome Reports, he was a computer programmer, built this website, which is very impressive, cataloging, promoting Eucharistic miracles. And he often said this, quote, "The more often we receive the Eucharist, the more we will become like Jesus, so that on this earth we will have a foretaste of heaven." End of quote. And that's really what the Eucharist is. It really is a foretaste of heaven. It's Christ himself. And as you know, he wasn't too different from modern kids. And what I like about him, and you might have seen him, we're going to answer the question of whether or not he was incorrupt. Some people were talking about this, maybe a little bit confused about this, because his mortal remains were put on display around the time of his beatification. And it seemed as if his body was incorrupt. Now, he wasn't, I'm going to give this away, he wasn't actually incorrupt. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But it sure looked that way from the pictures. His body was displayed wearing sort of the outfit that he would normally wear as a teenager, sort of Nike shoes, jeans, just dressed like any other teenager. He loved to play video games. He was a PlayStation guy. He wasn't an Xbox guy. He was a PlayStation guy. He loved, especially at the time when he was growing up, he got a PlayStation number 2, which came out in the year 2000. He was 9 years old. Now, this is amazing. If you know anybody who plays video games, and I know of a lot of adults who are, I'm not a gamer. When I was a kid, I played a little bit of, I don't know, I used to love Tecmo Bowl, if you remember that, some football games, Madden Football, NHL 94, that was a big one for me. But I really stopped playing video games, gosh, I don't know, like at some point in my late teens. But a lot, there are obviously professional gamers now. It's a huge industry. And I know a lot of adults who, quite frankly, are addicted to video games. They'll spend their entire weekend in their basement, in their man cave, playing video games. And I don't know. It has the potential to be a very addictive behavior. It obviously can be, I guess, fine if it's in moderation. But when Blessed Carlo was only 9 years old, this is amazing. He only allowed himself to play games for 1 hour a week. That's incredible discipline for a nine-year-old. And he did that as a form of penance. He did that as a form of spiritual discipline. He obviously wanted to play more, but that's amazing. And so very mature beyond his years spiritually, of course. And by the way, his heart was actually, because of the cancer, his family actually wanted to donate his organs when he died, but they couldn't do that because the leukemia had spread so much throughout his body. But his heart is actually now contained in a reliquary in the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi. So if you get a chance to go there, and as I was telling you a few days ago, I went to Assisi, I went to Rome for my honeymoon. We made a side trip to Assisi, but it would be cool to get back there and see the relic of Blessed Carlo Acutis's heart, which is displayed there. So anyways, there you have it. And my thanks to the Catholic News Agency for those facts about Carlo Acutis's life. I'm wondering if you out there have ever used technology to evangelize, like Blessed Carlo did. And if you have, I want to hear about that. How'd it go? 888-914-9149 is the number to call. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Don't forget, Pope Benedict XVI did say that there's this massive digital continent that needs to be evangelized. And that's partially what we do here at Relevant Radio. Of course, we're on traditional radio. That legacy media, it's still very strong today. Lots of people listening to the radio. You might be listening right now in your car. You might be stuck in a traffic jam out in LA or Chicago. Who knows? But if you are, be happy to keep you company. Call in 888-914-9149 if this is resonating with you. But we also want to reach people through any kind of media we can get our hands on. That's our mission here at Relevant Radio. So very much we are in the line, in that mindset, in that spirit of Blessed Carlo, who tried to do exactly that. So let me read to you a little bit about this interview that Carlos's mom gave to Alatea. It's really amazing. It is an exclusive interview, and this is sort of obviously in commemoration of his feast day today, but also don't forget her new book, as I mentioned off the top, just came out today in Italian. It's called The Secret of My Son. There is no English translation yet. I look forward to reading that. But I want to talk about what she said, because it was just an amazing interview. And for anybody out there who's a parent, this will really resonate, or if you hope to be a parent one day. And it's crazy to think that when you see pictures of this guy, and I was talking about this with my producer, Jim, before the show, and one of the things that Jim said was there have been a lot of young saints in the history of the church. Think about St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Think about so many different saints, St. Maria Goretti, who were very, very young when they died. That's happened in the past. But just one of the things that Jim said, and I think it's true, is that how much harder is it to be a saint with all of the temptations and pressures that are out there today, especially through the internet, through that digital continent? It's been a force for good. It's also been a force for grave evil as well. And a lot of things like that are simply tools that can be used either way. Like money can be used as a tool for good, for God, to advance his kingdom, or it can be used for evil purposes as well. So character counts when it comes to using it. But here's some of the things that Blessed Carlo's mom, Antonia, said in giving this interview to Alatea. And just want to read a couple of quotes. She was asked what her secret was. What did she do in order to raise a saint? And she said, quote, "Personally, I didn't do anything." She said, "I only gave my son the educational foundations that all parents should give. He went to a kindergarten," Carlo did, "where he actually received his religious education." She said that she had him baptized, but she herself was born into a secular family. Her father was an editor. He was constantly surrounded by writers. And she said, not once growing up did she hear anybody in her parents' circles talking about faith. And this is amazing. She said her first mass that she ever went to was her first communion mass. Her second mass was her confirmation mass. Her third mass was her wedding mass. So, wow, I guess I'm sure she wouldn't mind if I said this. She was basically a sino, right? Catholic in name only in a certain sense. So the three times she ever went to mass was to receive sacraments. So she said, she went on to say in the interview that, quote, "It was my son Carlo who taught me everything. Even as a child, he showed great piety," she said. "At the age of 3, when we passed in front of a church, he wanted to go in greet Jesus on the cross and Jesus in the tabernacle and bring little flowers to Our Lady. Imagine that, a three-year-old. I do think that children do have an innate sense of the divine. And we kind of talk it out of them as they grow up. The world kind of, like the waves crashing against the shoreline, kind of erodes that childlike, innocent faith. And we have to try to recapture that as well. As Jesus says, you have to turn and become like little children to enter the kingdom of heaven. And so that's really inspiring. Apparently, when he was 4 and a half, according to his mom, he was reading the Bible already. He was reading the lives of the saints. He was praying the rosary at the age of 4. Imagine, 4 and a half. And she said, quote, in the case of St. Therese of Lisieux, her parents were the great educators. In the case of Carlo, the roles were reversed. He was my little savior. And above all, he was my great educator in the faith, end of quote. That's an incredible testimony from Blessed Carlo's mom. We've got to go to the phones right now. Doug is on the line from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Cale. Viewed Carlos yesterday in the Diocese of Green Bay. He's on tour in the U.S., so catch him while he's here.
That's amazing. So there is a tour of his relics. So what exactly is going on there? Tell me about that.
Correct. His reliquary with his heart was in Green Bay yesterday.
I didn't know that. So the heart that was on display, I guess is normally on display in Assisi, is on the road. That's incredible. I did not know that. So I'm really glad that you called in, Doug. And I don't know where people can find out more information about this. Maybe we can dig up a link. We're trying to look for it right now. Apparently, Patrick's on the case. I'm sure he'll come up with that. But so there you go. If you're in Wisconsin, if you're in Green Bay, I don't know what the next stop is. Maybe Milwaukee. We'll try to find out. But that's amazing. So Blessed Carlos's heart is actually in the United States right now. So Doug, thank you so much for calling in. Sounds like you're on the road. Drive safe. Really appreciate that. So, wow, that's really amazing. So how about that? And let's go back now to Blessed Carlos's mom, Antonia, giving this interview. And again, she's just come out with a book about her son. And she was asked what made her son different from other young people his age. And she had a really good answer to that. She said, she basically quoted St. John Paul II, who said that when we open wide the doors to Christ, our lives do change. Our lives do change. Every ordinary life can become extraordinary. And that's exactly what Carlo did. He lived in Christ, for Christ, with Christ, in every situation, she said, from the smallest thing to the biggest thing, helping out at home, helping children who are victims of bullying. We talked about that before. Those who are in difficulty, who had disabilities, the homeless. He would bring the homeless food and blankets. And above all, he had this huge commitment to the apostolate. So this is incredible. She said that when he was 9 years old, Carlo was already reading computer engineering textbooks. Okay, so I guess if he's reading the Bible at 4, that shouldn't be surprising. So at the age of 9, he's reading computer engineering textbooks. And he bought these books, I guess with his allowance perhaps, at the Polytechnic University of Milan in Italy. He learned algorithms. And you all have heard about social media algorithms, how they work and how they kind of put things before you that they want you to see. So he learned about algorithms and he created programs, websites for parishes. He created one for the Jesuits. He created one for the Vatican. And she said he didn't do it for personal glory. He did it for the glory of heaven. And to achieve that, he spent hours and hours on it in the summertime. Instead of having fun, he would be at his computer until 3 a.m. I don't know when this kid slept, but some kids, it seems like they don't need to sleep. They're up all night, but not necessarily a good thing. But this is the desire. Most kids, when they're up till 3 a.m., I don't know if good things are happening, but he was doing some good stuff. He was trying to spread the good news, trying to share the gospel online on the digital continent. That's amazing. Here's another thing that's really cool too. And this was talked about in the little clip from Rome Reports that we played earlier in the program. Blessed Carlo Acutis, he created an exhibition on Eucharistic miracles that was traveling around. And that's amazing. At his age, he was able to do that, and the website about Eucharistic miracles. And obviously this is something that really touched him deeply. And I'm going to share one in particular that really got to him. But apparently that exhibition itself is still touring the world. It's been displayed in more than 10,000 parishes in the U.S. It's gone to Singapore, it's gone to China, it's gone to Japan, it's gone to Africa, it's gone to India. It's worldwide. And he started collecting, apparently, according to his mom, he started collecting material about Eucharistic miracles when he was 9 years old back in the year 2000. He went on a pilgrimage to Lanciano with his family. And that was really the thing that got him going with this. And that's obviously one of the more famous, it might even be the most famous Eucharistic miracle, that might be disputed. But the one from Lanciano, Italy, is really, really well known. And if you haven't heard about that one, it happened in the 8th century. And it was around 700 AD, and there was a priest in Lanciano. He was in a monastery, and he basically had a crisis of faith. He no longer believed necessarily, even though he was a priest, that Christ was really present in the Eucharist, body, blood, soul, and divinity. So as the story goes, when he was celebrating Mass and he was saying the words of consecration, the host turned into a circle of flesh. The wine visibly turned into blood. So essentially what happened was the disguise was dropped, if you will. The accidents, the appearances of, what happens, of course, at the consecration is that the substance of the bread and wine becomes the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. But the appearances, or the accidents, as they're called, that's the technical philosophical name for it, the accidents remain. In other words, still looks like bread, still looks and tastes like wine. However, that was dropped so that the reality could be sensed and seen and touched. And so this priest understood that, wow, this, my doubts have now been definitively answered. Obviously the whole town, the news spread like wildfire. And that's where the host, which had turned into flesh, the blood of the Eucharist was put on permanent display in Lanciano. Now, this miracle has been examined even up to the modern day. In 1971, Pope Paul VI, and we talked yesterday about Vatican II, and he was the pope that obviously closed the Council of Vatican II, but Pope Paul VI, he was not afraid of the faith, you know, how science might prove or disprove the faith. And so he actually allowed and encouraged an investigation to happen. In 1971, Italian doctors, scientists using sophisticated equipment checked it out, and they were able to examine this host, and they determined that the host actually was real human flesh, living flesh, and they said it was from a human heart that was expertly dissected. That's what it was like to them. The blood type, they even figured out the blood type, and the blood type was, now I've heard in some homilies, it makes for great preaching, that the blood type was O, the universal donor, Christ gives his blood for all. Well, it actually wasn't the case. It would have been awesome if it was, but despite what you might have heard in homilies, the blood type was actually AB and has all the proteins that you would find in fresh human blood. So biologically undamaged after 1,200 years. It's amazing. It's incredible. And so that was the miracle that impressed probably not only you as you're listening to it, but Blessed Carlo, who saw this up close on a family pilgrimage when he was young. That's kind of what led to his devotion for this. We got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back with this and more of your phone calls and other exciting stuff. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We're talking about Blessed Carlo Acutis. It's his feast day today. Today was the day he passed away back in 2006 at the age of 15. He accomplished so much in his short time on earth and is accomplishing probably much more in heaven through his intercession. He was beatified by Pope Francis in 2020. Let's go to the phones right now. Elaine is calling from Chicago. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Cale.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that every time I have technology problems at work, I pray and I ask Blessed Carlo to help me out, and it works every time.
That is amazing. Do you work in IT? Are you in tech, or are you?
No, I work in the medical field, but, you know, we use computers all the time, yeah. And every now and then, like, something does not work right. So I just close my eyes and ask him to help me out. And pretty soon, like, things just go, it's like going smoothly.
Oh, that is awesome. You know what? I'm going to start doing that myself. That is a great idea. And if you call the IT department, they'll always say, have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in again? Well, that's even before you do that, pray and ask Blessed Carlo for his intercession, because you might not even have to unplug it. It'll work. So that's awesome. Thank you, Elaine, for that call. That's a great, great idea. Very practical. That was Elaine calling in Chicago. And yeah, I created this website about Eucharistic miracles. And I'm going to be sharing with you, actually, this is amazing. He essentially prophesied how he was going to die, even as a child. This is just out of this world. And I'll talk about that in just a second. But well known for his love of trying to reach people for Christ through the media, just like we do here at Relevant Radio. We can make him one of the patron saints of Relevant Radio. Maybe I'll have to talk to Father Rocky about that. But he got really excited about Eucharistic miracles, as I said before the break, when he and his family visited Lanciano and saw the ancient miracle from the year approximately 700 AD there. And he was just thinking, man, like, why isn't every single Catholic in the world just making a beeline to their local parish and getting in front of the tabernacle? So according to his mom, and his mom gave a really interesting interview with Alatea with the website, she's got a book that came out in Italian today about her son, about the secret of his holiness. Hasn't been translated into English yet, but she gave an interview, which was no doubt translated from Italian into English, with the Alatea news site. And she talked about that. His mother talked about, Antonia talked about how Carlo wanted to shake up their consciences, get them out of their torpor, out of spiritual lukewarmness, because there's no longer any awareness, by and large. Now, of course, some of us know truly, but the idea that Christ is present, he really is there, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, that's something that a lot of Catholics pay lip service to, but do they really believe it? Why is it that people don't go to adoration? Why aren't they attending Mass? Why is Mass attendance so dismal? And so she said that really the secret of his life was that he had integrity. He practiced what he believed. His life was consistent with those beliefs. And apparently, according to his mom, Carlo always used to say that we must Eucharistize ourselves. Eucharistize ourselves. Interesting term. Because that's how we become contagious for Christ. He used to say, quote, being always united to Jesus, that is my program of life, end of quote. So she said, apparently in her book that just came out, that he had an intuition that he was going to die at a young age. And in fact, his mom was kind of prepared for this. And she said that she had a feeling one time when she was in the Cathedral of Chartres in France, and she was in front of a relic, and apparently it's a relic of the veil that belonged to the Virgin Mary. I have not seen this. I haven't heard about this, but maybe you have. Maybe you've been there in Chartres Cathedral in France. And Carlo apparently started saying some things around that time that came true later on. Ever since he was a child, apparently he always said that he would stay young, he would die because a vein in his brain would break. That he would always stay forever young. And he died at 15, so that's certainly true, I guess. And he would die because essentially of a hemorrhage in his brain, a vein in his brain would burst. And that's actually what happened because of his leukemia. That actually did happen to him. He also said that when he was at the weight of 154 pounds, that's when he would die. And that's exactly what he weighed when he died. And when he first was diagnosed with leukemia, he said to his mother, "Mom, I'm not going to make it out of here alive. I want you to know that, but I'm going to send you lots of signs from heaven." And he never complained during his entire illness. If somebody asked him, "Are you suffering?" he would say, "There are people who are suffering more than I am." So he would never complain. He would never become bitter. It was an example of great sanctity, even as he was in the process of dying. So his mom said that this was the supreme will of God. He was ready and ripe for heaven. It was a boy of upright life, of extraordinary purity, generosity, goodness, and we never had the slightest doubt that he was already in heaven. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about whether Carlo was actually found to be incorrupt. There was some controversy about that when his body was on display. And we did get a caller earlier, Doug in Wisconsin, who said that his heart is actually making the rounds in the United States. He actually just saw it. I think he said he saw it in Green Bay. We've been trying really hard. Our crack research staff, led by Patrick Alog, have been trying to find any kind of link to the tour of the relics of Blessed Carlo that's apparently happening right now in the U.S., and we have not been able to unearth anything. So I think first thing we need to do is ask for his intercession, just like Elaine in Chicago does whenever she's having a tech problem. So yes, we need to do that. So Patrick, ask Carlo to pray for you. But secondly, if anybody out there, anybody listening right now to this program, knows of any kind of link or information that we can share with people, please let us know. You can call us 888-914-9149, or you can maybe just tweet at me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We also have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. Or you can email us, cale@relevantradio.com. Blessed Carlo, I wonder if he had a Twitter account. I don't know, he should have, but at any rate, when they did look into his tomb, as they often do with saints who are in the process of canonization, and they did find his body intact, but not incorrupt. But his organs were intact, including his heart, which was then obviously put into a reliquary, and it was carried in the procession during his beatification in Assisi, and apparently is in the United States, as we just talked about. And let me just share with you a little bit about that whole process of exhuming his body that took place. And the incorrupts of the church, and again, he's not incorrupt, but incorruptibility is an amazing witness of the truth of the faith, I believe. You just don't see this sort of thing outside of the Catholic Church. And I remember, as I mentioned to you, Trish and I went to Rome for our honeymoon. We saw a lot of things, went to a lot of churches. And I had taken a picture. We mentioned this yesterday because we were talking about the inauguration of Vatican II, the 60th anniversary, which was yesterday. And Pope John the 23rd, St. John the 23rd, his remains were in St. Peter's Basilica. And I mistakenly thought he was corrupt as well. I mean, they looked pretty good. But he's not apparently incorrupt. However, his remains are preserved. I believe there's a bit of a wax mask over his face, that sort of thing. But I thought he was incorrupt at the time. I did not know this. But I was sort of sharing some pictures from my honeymoon, really trying to bore my friends with this. And I had a friend who was a Protestant minister who I used to work with when I was a Protestant minister, and his name was Brad. And I remember showing Brad and his wife these pictures, and they were kind of bored, and as people get when you try to show family photos. But I was just so excited about all the stuff I was discovering in Rome. So I showed this picture of what I thought was the incorrupt body of John the 23rd. And that's when Brad really perked up. He was like, whoa, wait a minute. This is the Pope of the Second Vatican Council? What? What's going on here? Now, he wasn't incorrupt, but there have been many, many incorruptibles in the history of the church. So what does it actually mean when we say that someone is incorrupt? Is there a fine distinction? Around the time of his beatification, back in 2020, Hannah Brockhaus from the Catholic News Agency sort of came up with an explainer on this, on incorruptibles, because of the fact that Carlo Acutis' body seemed to be incorrupt at the time, was on display. But here's what they said, actually. This is the bishop. These are the words of Bishop Domenico Sorrentino of Assisi. This is how he clarified this back in 2020. He said that Carlo's body, although it was intact, was, quote, found in the normal state of transformation typical of the cadaveric condition, the condition of being a cadaver. End of quote. So his body was arranged with dignity for public display. There was a silicone reconstruction of his face. But that did lead a lot of people to ask the question, what does it mean exactly to be incorruptible? Well, this is something that's on a bit of a different level. It's a miraculous preservation of a body from normal decay after death. And it turns out that the church doesn't really have a cut and dry, ready package definition of exactly what condition a body has to be in to be considered incorrupt. And the body doesn't have to necessarily stay in exactly the same condition in which it was found, but it has to be unexplainable by natural means. It has to be not caused by intentional preservation, such as embalming. If you embalm a body, that doesn't count as being incorruptible, which should seem obvious, but mummification, that would be another case where, you know, the Egyptian pharaohs that have been unearthed are not canonizable saints. Okay, so now a lot of you guys have probably read this book. There was a famous book that came out. It's still out there today. There's still plenty of copies out there. It's called The Incorruptibles. That was written by a woman named Joan Carol Cruz. Now, she died back in 2012, but in 1977, she came out with this book called The Incorruptibles. And it was wildly popular. And she, in that book, talked about 102 saints who are actually recognized by the church to be incorrupt. Now, there are more. There are many more than just 102. But these were the ones that she could track down that had an incredible weight of evidence behind them. And by the way, she did all this pre-internet age. So she could have used Blessed Carlo, maybe doing some internet research for her, but she did all of this before the internet of the age. She had to actually get out there, correspond, imagine that, write letters, visit shrines that had these incorruptible saints in order to authenticate whether or not these saints were really incorrupt or whether they had maybe been embalmed. And there was a lot of controversy about certain saints. Probably the best, I would say, now I could be wrong, but I don't think there's any more beautiful incorrupt than Saint Bernadette Subaru, the saint of Lourdes, who of course encountered Our Lady. Her incorrupt body is probably the best preserved one that's out there. Now, apparently, by the way, there was a pope who gave a sort of a definition of incorruptibility when it comes to the process of beatifying saints, canonizing saints. Pope Benedict the 14th. Pope Benedict the 14th, not Pope Benedict the 16th, but way back in the year, somewhere around 1708 to 1728, somewhere in that time, Pope Benedict the 14th, and his name at the time, his pre-papal name was Prospero Lambertini. Sounds a little bit like something you'd want to drive. And Lambertini, do you have a Lambertini? No, I don't. I just drive a... Anyways, so he wrote a very lengthy document about how to tell whether or not a saint is incorruptible way back in the 1700s. And it's basically a book. It's a big book. And at the time he was a young theologian. He was a canon lawyer. And he said, this is the future Pope Benedict the 14th. He said, the bodies of saintly persons that are found intact, but disintegrated after a few years could not be considered miraculous preservation. So the only ones that are considered extraordinary and therefore incorruptible are those that retain their lifelike flexibility, color, freshness without any deliberate intervention for many years following their deaths, end of quote. So this, she talks about this in her book, Joan Carol Cruise, in her book, The Incorruptible. So she quotes him. And some saints, other than, of course, St. Bernadette, we know about, but St. John of the Cross, whose body would have been, you know, very much in people's minds back in the 1700s, because he died in 1591. His body, apparently, is still perfectly supple. St. Charbel Maklouf, a lot of Lebanese Catholic friends talk a lot about St. Charbel, have a great devotion to him. He was a Lebanese monk who died in the year 1898. Apparently, he's incorruptible as well. So there you go. Also, sometimes people will say when they're in the presence of one of the incorruptibles, there's a scent of flowers, a fragrant scent of some sort. And apparently, people say that St. Charbel's grave emanated a bright light. And that's what got people thinking, maybe we should exhume the body and see if he's incorruptible, because people sensed apparently a light coming from his tomb, according to reports at that time, So some of the saints that people did think were incorruptible turned out not to be. They turned out to be mummified or embalmed in some way, but that's not, what's the case with the real incorruptibles. But in the case of Blessed Carlo, his body was intact, but it was in the normal stages of decomposition, just to clear all this up. And apparently somebody called into the show, didn't want to come on the air, and said, I saw the relic, and that's a reference to the relic of Blessed Carlo's heart, which is traveling around the United States right now. And apparently, according to this caller, It's a piece of the heart muscle and not the whole heart. So thanks for clarifying that. Appreciate that. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. When we come back, I'm going to share a little lighthearted view about adoration, because one of the things that Blessed Carlo really wanted people to do was he wanted people to spend time in front of the Blessed Sacrament. He was totally a Eucharistic soul, and he wanted other people to be that way as well. But you meet certain individuals when you're there at adoration, and sometimes it leads to a little bit of mirth. So I got to share that with you after the break. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Be right back. Today, we'd like to thank Robert, who's listening in California, for donating his Toyota. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car today.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call in. It's the feast day of Blessed Carlo Acutis, a really inspiring saint, a young saint, died at the age of 15. And his mom came out today with a book about the secret of her son, Carlo Acutis, the secret of his sanctity. It's in Italian. It's going to be translated into English eventually. But she gave a really cool interview to Alatea, talking about how her son essentially evangelized her. He was totally online with God, no pun intended. From the age of really 3 years old, being a toddler, was just drawn to the Eucharist, drawn to Our Lady. That's the way it should be. And speaking of Christ and Our Lady, Advent is coming up. Christmas is coming. I know we're not even at All Saints Day, All Souls Day, but we want to get ready. We want you to be ready. We want you to have the time to be ready for it. So that's why we're giving away 200 beautiful nativity sets. And you can sign up for this for a chance to win by going to relevantradio.com/set. relevantradio.com/set for your chance to win this amazing nativity set. It's hand-painted, donated by a very generous person who wanted people to get out there and put these in their front lawns, maybe in a bay window, porches, you name it. I want you to display the real reason for the season. But there's only a few. Obviously, there's only 200. We have millions of listeners, but somebody's going to get it. Might as well be you. And you only have until midnight Central Time, October the 16th. So just a few days from now, it's 4 days left to sign up. So you might as well just do it now before you forget. And you might get an Advent/Christmas gift that you'll never forget, and neither will anybody in your community, because they'll be drawn to Christ through it. So speaking of slash Advent slash Christmas, go to relevantradio.com/set in order to register for your chance to win. And I've been threatening to share this for some days now, and I think I'll finally do this, because one of the great things about Carlo Acutis is that he was just full of joy and enthusiasm, and he would have definitely had the kind of personality that drew people to Christ, had a good sense of humor, and our Lord had a great sense of humor as well. So I want to share a little bit of a humorous piece about adoration, which Blessed Carlo was so fond of, wanted people to get in touch with. A friend of mine named Sean McAfee, he has a really popular Catholic website called Epic Pew. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it kind of a humorous piece that popped up recently by Laura Ricketts, writing for Epic Pew. It was all about the 9 people that you meet in adoration. The 9 people you meet in adoration. Maybe you've read the book by Tuesdays with Maury, if you remember that book, it became a movie. Mitch Albom, he's actually a sports writer, but he became famous writing these novels like Tuesdays with Maury, The 5 People You Meet in Heaven. Well, this is kind of along those lines, but this is a humorous touch, though. The 9 people you meet in adoration, according to Laura Ricketts. And she says, basically, hey, most people, when they go to adoration, they want to spend some time with our Eucharistic Lord. And usually it's intended to be quiet time, but sometimes it's a little bit less than quiet. Sometimes it's actually downright distracting. So she says these 9 people always seem to find their way into your prayer time. Which ones have you met so far? So number 1, the 9 people you meet in adoration. Number 1, the whisperer. The whisperer. She says they have a few variations. There are some who say their prayers in a whisper as they inhale. You know, sometimes they exhale silently. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's the other half of the prayer. There are also the sighing prayers. The sighing prayers. And they like to pray more on the exhale, often in the form of a sigh, which at first seems very pious. But then when they sigh every time they exhale, it seems a little bit less pious. But fully committed whisperers simply whisper all of their prayers. Sometimes there's a little hiss or a whistle when they pronounce an S or a C, a soft C. Sometimes it's just loudly enough to make you lose your place in your own prayers. But you need to surrender to the whisperers. Forget about it and just gaze at Jesus in the tabernacle. He is very glad that you're there. Number 2, the second type of person that you meet in adoration is the rosary clinker. The rosary clinker. I don't know if you can identify with this at all. And Laura Ricketts says that it's inevitable that at some point in adoration, you're going to encounter a rosary clinker. You know that you've met one when they seat themselves. And after rustling around in their pocket or purse or prayer bag, they remove what can only be described as a spiritual weapon of mass destruction, made of extra noisy chains, glass or ceramic beads, maybe some tiny little bells. It's usually outfitted with extra metals that add to the overall effect of the rosary, sounding like consecration bells. Maybe a little bit more like that than a sacramental, but at any rate, you know that every time they transition, there's going to be a rattle. There's going to be the rosary banging into the pew in front of them at least once every decade. And if you're really lucky, they'll say the rosary and do the chaplet right afterwards, which is more rapid fire clinking sounds. So anyways, try not to let that give you angst because, hey, maybe this is a reminder from God that you need to pray your rosary more, or at least try to concentrate more while you're praying. I don't know. All right, number 3, the third type of person that you meet in adoration. This is very humorous. It's meant to be tongue-in-cheek. It's meant to be in fun. So if this is you, don't take offense to it. The putterer. Who is the putterer? Well, Laura Ricketts says every so often you're at adoration, you'll find yourself with somebody there who just can't sit still. And very often this person is just overcome with the reality that something is out of place. Maybe a book on the bookshelf. And the putterer will just get up, reorganize the bookshelf. Once that's done, they'll go back to their seat, and then they'll notice that the flowers probably need to be rearranged. The candles are not evenly spaced out. The prayer books need to be adjusted. This is an essential role to be played in the economy of the Adoration Chapel. The putterer. So, hey, somebody needs to be a Martha. If you're Mary sitting there trying to pray, somebody needs to be the Martha, kind of organizing things, getting some real work done. Number 4, the snoozer. The snoozer. I think we can kind of surmise what this might be. Hey, better to just let them go. They might need a rest. I don't know. As long as they don't turn into snorers, that's okay. They showed up. Hey, that pleases the Lord. We might be that person at one point. Life's pretty tiring. Hey, don't forget, Peter, James, and John fell asleep, by the way, in the Garden of Gethsemane, so it's happened to better people than you and me. Number five is the sitter. The sitter. Somebody who comes in and knock off Birkenstocks, baggy pants, a Franciscan University shirt, enter the chapel, they kneel, and then they just kind of sit there on the floor. They don't need a chair. They just spend hours on the floor, and they'll unpack their Bible, a Scott Hahn book, some highlighters, and they will sit cross-legged for hours. And hey, I don't know, maybe producer Jim is like that. He went to Franciscan University of Stephenville. I don't know if he, are you a sitter, Jim? I don't know. The concentrator, that's number six. Hey, they are super, super, super intense. Their kids can be there running around, creating habit, but they will not lose their focus on the monstrance. No way. Seems like, if it's a mom, seems like they might be oblivious to what their kids are doing running around, but they're really not. They know exactly where each one of them is, what they're up to, and how long she has before they reach their limits. So yes, concentration skills, unbelievable. Number seven, the long hauler. The long hauler. They're in the chapel when you arrive. They're there when you go. If you have a holy hour, they're there for many, many more holy hours. They're hunkered down. They've got a bag of devotionals, maybe a sleeping bag. I don't know. The homeschooler. Okay. They'll bring along the Lord of the Rings or a copy of The Lion and the Witch of the Wardrobe. Oh, this is a horrible stereotype. They're doing their book reports. The meal skipper, somebody whose stomach is growling. That's number nine, the meal skipper. They are hungering for the Eucharist. So I kind of raced through that. Those are the nine people you meet in adoration. Maybe it was funny, maybe it wasn't. But it's been a slice. It's been great to be with you today. Thank you so much for joining me on The Cale Clark Show. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.